Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance podcast show 186. Rob Jones.
Hello, everybody.
Now, we are talking in the past.
Yes.
I am currently cycling my bike in Girona. And you are still in the UK and it's probably raining.
Yes. I'm doing a nice long run tomorrow.
Nice. Now, mate, when you are thinking, so when you went back to the UK, you probably thought it's not going to be as warm. So my nutritional and hydration needs will be a little bit less.
Yes.
Something you had some foresight on.
I did.
Do you still notice, though, if, let's say, you just run in the UK with water and no sodium replacement or electrolytes, do you still feel a difference or do you think you don't?
I do. I get really dehydrated. I tried that. You know what? I actually tried that the other day. I went for a nice 25K run with just 500 ml, and I came back and I felt depleted, and my urine color was very, very golden.
Golden.
So I did the same run with one 1500 precision tablet, and I felt a hell of a lot better. Maybe not just, I was still dehydrated when I came back, but I felt like my performance overall on the run was more consistent.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, so I have my tablets just at the side of the laptop here. I don't take, certainly don't take as many as I do in the Middle East. And what I don't do, actually, I don't take any post-run as recovery or anything like that, which I would do when I'm back in the summer in Dubai.
Yeah, solid. Well, today we have Andy Brodziak on, who is a guy from South Africa, who actually I met down there at Ironman South Africa last year. He's a bit of a weapon triathlete. And he comes on the show. He also works as a sweat tester. He's a triathlon coach, and very experienced one and a good one. And he's also a sweat tester for Precision Fuel and Hydration. And so he's got tons of experience, and not just within the endurance game, but he talks a bit about, he does sweat testing with boxers, with some racing car drivers, I think. And I can't remember who else said, maybe tennis, something like that. And he's just got some incredible advice, really, and some great stories around, like, real world sort of implementing this stuff in the real world, and a few things to think about when you are going into doing exercise sessions or recovering from them or during them. And I think when we had Andy Blow on from Precision Fuel Hydration, he talked about the three levers, which was the carbohydrates, fluid, and sodium. And Andy reiterates that message really well, and he actually uses some of the stuff that I was fueling with in Roth. He uses that as some examples to help say maybe where I could have done things differently, or could have done things even maybe better, or where some people traditionally go wrong with it as well. So it's a really interesting chat. It's a long one. You're going to need a notebook and a pen just to make sure you're writing down some of the things Andy says, or you'll be pressing pause and stop quite a lot. And yeah, hopefully it's helpful. And if you'd like to speak to Andy a bit more, or you're in the UK and you want to get sweat tested, then Andy's contact details are in the show notes as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So here we go with Andy Brodziak.
Awesome. I don't need this really.
That's your African blood in you, mate.
too much African chat. You know how it goes. So.
Yeah. Easy. Well, I'm going to press record now. Yeah. And then I'll just say welcome, and then we'll just literally go back to chatting how we were, mate. We'll just have a yarn, as the Aussies like to say.
Have a yarn.
So you can hear a thing now saying record to the cloud.
Recording in progress.
Andy, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mr. Walker.
What you said you haven't done many podcasts before. Is this number one or number two?
I think I'm going to have to be honest and say I'm a virgin podcaster. Yeah, number one, first one. I feel honored. I feel like I've made it.
Welcome.
This world, I've made it now.
And actually, it came from your doing. You messaged me and said, "Well done on Roth." And then I was like, "Well, how are you?" And we caught up for a bit, and then you ended up a week later on a show. So your fault.
Less than a week. Yeah, nice one. Yeah. No, I don't mind chatting all things endurance, the good old nutrition, hydration, fueling stuff, and share any coaching stories and stuff, and try to keep listeners engaged and give them a few things to sort of learn and take home and actually use in their day-to-day training.
So let's first tell the listeners who you are. We met last year in South Africa, Ironman South Africa, and you extremely kindly bought me a big stash of Precision Fuel and Hydration down, and we've kind of stayed in touch since then. You're a triathlon coach, but you're also a sweat tester. Are you a fuel tester now as well, now that Precision are doing fueling as well? Or
yeah, you're spot on. So been with Precision, who I know is like a friend of the show for you guys, and you're a user. It's into my sixth year now up in Leeds in the UK. Obviously I'm South African, met you in PE, but just came out like you did to have a good race last year in March time. Coaching, 15 plus years, with a bit of a strength rehab background, but not as full on like work stuff that you get involved with, but just mainly kind of like the corrective exercise stuff and then just general gym. This is going back to London days. And then that naturally evolved 10, 12 years ago into more online not before it was a thing, but I just did more and more. And I was lucky to be taken under the wing of Ben Bright, who's still the current GB elite head coach. He does less and less hands-on stuff, but he had a commercial company, and I basically just joined them 2012 and kind of learned the ropes, took on more, weaned off going down to London because I moved up to Yorkshire, which I absolutely love. I live down the road actually from the Brownlees, ironically, but nothing to do with them. I just run in the same forest.
They're never home.
And see Johnny a lot. they're never home. And I see Johnny a lot. Super nice, friendly guy. Alistair, and I see his girlfriend around a lot because she used to do stuff with Precision. So it's kind of a small world up here. Huge pool of athletes. I've just learned a shed load thanks to Precision, really, because getting in front of people has taught me all the errors and mistakes. You know, I went in with a bit of a background of knowledge of like kind of what to do, how to maybe do it with hydration. But I approached them 5-6 years ago, Andy Blur, and I said, look, I'm winging it with salt pills and come from a warm environment. I got tested years and years ago just because I was going to a warm race. But my athletes are just like, I'm just telling them to willy-nilly take a couple of tabs, and I don't really know. Anyway, the journey started, and of course I didn't know what I was really doing, and then got in front of some professionals quite quickly, and then pro athletes, but it doesn't make a difference. We all just have sweat. It's great. Tennis player, I remember Tyson Fury. Oh man, got thrown in with that. Probably shouldn't even, well, he's retired now, isn't he? But, you know, sweating buckets at the side of the ring. We went to his place, Ricky Hatton's place, and in Manchester. And yeah, he was full of the gob, chirps and stuff. And ultimately, you know, the little lightweight guy sweated more sodium than he did. And of course he wanted the biggest score, one of the biggest numbers, and chirping me about sharks in South Africa, I'll never forget. And I was just like, yeah, there are sharks, but I mean, you just crack on, man. And he was just sort of quite interesting. He sweated buckets, being, what was he, probably 90 plus kilos. And one of the things that stood out there actually was boxers, going off a tangent here, but it's all good. They've got their big bottle of water on the side of the ring. You probably know this from anything you've watched training wise, not in competition. And they're just glugging loads of water because they're sweating. They're doing 3-minute basically VO2 efforts, aren't they?
Yeah.
3-minute rounds. And it's the way I thought about it, so high intensity, and then, you know, sweat loads. And then I remember, you know, so that stuck with me. And then I remember I had a really fortunate another exposure to, in the same era, I was clearly doing a boxing drive, Nicola Adams, little completely opposite end of the scale. For the British people, they'll know the Olympic gold medalist Nicola Adams, lightweight boxer. She then retired a few months later, but she, with nutritionist, came up from Sheffield to me and in Harrogate, and she was also just drinking loads of fluid. And of course we salt tested her because they have to drop weight, they have to make weight and then come up back to weight. And I found that fascinating because the nutritionist was on it. He was using the carb drink. Well, let me rephrase it. The sachets they do with 16 grams of sugar in, just to bring them slowly back up with the carbohydrates. And I was like, well, of course, that makes complete sense. Instead of stripping weight, and then they come back quite dangerously. It's quite dangerous. And we asked her like how much she was drinking. Both him and I looked at each other, and we had to tell her, bear in mind, she's at the twilight of her finishing her career. Like, stop drinking so much, Nicola. And she was just like, what are you talking about? And it's, and I've seen this, the point is, I suppose it's now led me to realize, talking to all these ultra runners, and I've listened to a few of your podcasts recently, it must be the timing. There's like, you guys have been, there was a Jordan, big Jordan run, and the Ultra X stuff from a while ago, one of your athletes that you interviewed, Irish, or your coach, I think, in Ireland. And there's just some, again, you guys do some desert stuff where you are, and long runs and stuff, events. There's, it's just, we what I'm finding when I talk to these guys and girls is they're drinking a shitload of water in the lead up, which sounds absolutely obviously normal and right. And it's coming with some consequences. I'm generalizing, not everyone. And I'll touch on that in a bit when I suppose we do bullet points on kind of errors and things that I've seen. So, so that's taken me down that hole with testing. And of course, then I'm finding that most people need help with fuel. So long-winded answer to your original answer. People needing help with like, what do I fuel with to go with it? And most people just fall down this rabbit hole of gels. And interestingly, we'll touch on that and separating sort of solids and stuff. And that's why I asked you what you did for Roth just recently in your great sub 9. And we'll use that as an example, because I just heard about it 5 minutes ago from you. And then what I'm hearing from the average amateur, and then a few professionals, I've been lucky to test sort of Lucy Charles last year, July, actually, before her Kona build up, and just talking to her about that. Obviously won't get into too much confidential stuff there, but there's some things that just pop up, and then again, just talking to Precision themselves, you know, they just do it every day, and they're putting out loads of blogs on all the athletes they test. So you just suddenly pick up the patterns, the low-hanging fruit, easy wins for most people. And then I suppose my main thing is then coaching, you know, full time. So I'm remote, but I go do some trips away, one-on-one, or lucky enough to do some training camps in Canaries in winter, but traveling a little bit less and less, because just with a toddler and life, and then racing has slowed down this year. So when we raced South Africa, I then went on to Hawaii. You had a break, which was great. And Shem, dealt with your long-standing Achilles sciatic issue. And kept in touch a bit. And then it's great to see you come out of the woodwork. And the dream is always just to nip under sub 9, because it's just kind of the elusive, you've made it kind of Ironman number for us. guys, you're in your 30s, but I'm about 10 years older than you now. So it's still maybe there in the under the bonnet somewhere. So yeah, shoot. That's kind of a long history, just to give people some insight of my experience and background.
Yeah, well, mate, massively extensive, which is one of the reasons why I knew you'd be good to bring on the show, because your experience with it is so large. I'm wondering, I'm going to start with a question for you, mate, that we see often in sport, probably often in endurance sport, we see themes come into play, don't we? And often themes that might have been used 10 years ago have found their way back into training. You know, you might see one athlete doing a hill rep session and suddenly everyone needs to do hill reps. You know, suddenly aerodynamic testing is the new big thing. Sweat testing was pretty big. I remember, you know, a few years ago, it was all about getting your sweat rate tested. And obviously lactate testing is now quite a big thing. What have you seen, any themes sort of come and go during your time? I mean, since 2012, you've been coaching and been around a lot of the athletes. Have you seen a lot of themes come and go, or is there one particular theme? I mean, imagine you're going to say around fueling and hydration being this one, but is there one theme that you see every single time that you're like, this cannot be ignored? Or is there a few that you see come and go and you think, that one's going to go again soon? Or if you look at you're coaching from a broader perspective of the different themes going on. What do you see?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I do have a bit of a theory on a few of those things. So I was obviously coaching a little bit before 2012 as well. But you're right, like that's when I got a bit more serious, but probably five years longer than that after that. Before that. Yeah, one of the things that hasn't gone away, which all I listen to all the great coaches now, there's certainly chatting to Norwegian, the podcast with chatting to Norwegian coaches and a few of the Germans. And I'll mention Dan Plues in a minute as well. My relationship with him, Dr. Plues, who you all know of. They all come back to consistency, which is no surprise. So I won't even touch on that because that's been talked to about for death. The lactates, to quote sort of Plues himself, because I've now become a bit affiliated with him as an accredited coach under him. Certainly earlier this year, we've got a 3-4 year relationship, going back to when he broke the world record at Kona, and then he started his education courses. But so I work under Enduro IQ as well as a sort of an accredited coach, but have my own coaching company. But one of the things he's been quoted at recently, which I was thinking, I was like, oh, you're right. He said, like, lactates have become a bit of a thing now, certainly because the Norwegians are doing it. And I won't even probably bore people with that. But it's like, look, we've been doing lactates. He was doing it 10 years ago or more, but when he was probably doing his PhD and stuff, and he did all around HRV and stuff. But of course, he was working with Rose. And so it's just, there's a lot of people using lactates. I don't use it, but I don't think you're doing it well or properly. So trainers and athletes, and then utilizing the data correctly. You know, that seems to be the theme that I've come out of listening to these experienced people that know a lot more than me. It's like, it's great using it all, but you've got to know and the different scenarios. So I won't go into the details of lactate, I don't think. And I'm not a physiologist anyway, but I obviously understand all that. But you're absolutely right. You sort of stole the words. What's become very pertinent to me was, like, we get ready for this race, whether it's an Ironman or the middle distance. We train our butts off. We get into environments and groups. That seems to be the most common theme that stays right. If you're in a really good environment, generally the athletes thrive. You look back to Brecket Sutton when I was watching his stuff 10, 12 years ago. He's still sort of lurking around. You had the ITU squads creating an environment, and then up here where I am, we've got a nice new Leeds environment where they thrive. You've got the Brownlees at the center, and then all the guys kind of hovering around, and they create a performance environment. That hasn't changed, and that's the human social element as well as the training ethic. But if I just touch on the sort of topicals, is the fueling, because when I was going into the coaching, I obviously had to take a bit of my experience having done, you know, I've done over 20 Ironmans now, but then I was quite virgin into it and sort of around the 10-hour mark, then went to Hawaii, made all sorts of mistakes in 2009 because I didn't know what I was doing. But it was all about energy drink, and it still was, and it's just carb drink. And at that time, it was like, you got to buy just a carb drink and you pop in your bottles and you crack on, maybe you eat when you're hungry. And there was just no awareness. And there was, if you went online, you just went down rabbit holes of, you take this amount of carbohydrate or this amount of calories. And it always felt quite sugary and quite sweet to me, but obviously it tastes quite nice when you're out training. And then you never quite feel quite great, maybe in a long distance event, fine for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, half Ironman, marathon, whatever you want to call it, 5 hour race, no matter what it is. But sort of it was almost like an afterthought. It was very important. It was always came in at the last part of the, never really chatted about in training, always came in the last, like, 3 days leading to the race. So that was first thing that I think Precision tackled really well. They start as a hydration brand, of course, that's their original thing. And by default, they Andy Blow, the owner, just, you probably all, you know, people know the story if they've followed it a bit over the years, that he was racing, and he just by default had to create some strong electrolytes for the outliers that lose a lot of salt. He seems to have hit an area that people have helped people. All the anecdotal evidence show that yes, it might not, they might not, some people don't require extra electrolytes or sodium, and the outliers like himself, who are super salty in hot environments like you guys in Dubai, have potentially need some extra on long events or training sessions. So I find the awareness now is gone through the roof, and that's partly due to a lot more of the professional teams actually paying more attention to separating that you can't just take an energy drink, an ISO drink. Another classic, I remember when the World Champs came to Harrogate in 2019, road cycling, huge event. Esteban Chavez, who's a Colombian, like, tour rider, climber,
yeah,
little little machine. He was with Scott at the time, Michelin, and they got hold of me because I was obviously just in the area. Said, can we have a test? And I was like, wow, has this guy never been tested? Cool. We went to, you know, there's this little guy, and he showed me a picture of him. He was absolutely caked white and like at the end of his Tour of Spain stage, and obviously having all sorts of problems along with that. And the team just, I said, so Esfand, what do you do? What does the team hand you out the window? He said, well, one's an ISO bottle with like a mark on it, and the other one's just like energy drink. And I was like, well, do you know what, you know where this is going? Basically, it was just no real, it was like, just crack on. And that's, you know, it was a South African actually sports nutrition that was with him. And he said, you know, we need to check. And he was super salty. I think he was 1400 milligrams per liter of sweat. I probably could have told him that just by looking at him. Not that I'm an expert, but you don't need to be a genius. But then you need to also step back, because people can take that and run with it and go, and I was a bit like this, oh, well, he needs to have loads of salt. It's all about a context. So again, we can go down this into the nitty gritty, depending on how you want. I can get a bit more technical or not. I don't want to go on far with it. But you know, it's context is everything. So you've got the sports scientist side, which again, precision completely recognize that they believe that we've got enough stores in our body and we shouldn't really need to supplement. And they are right. And you've got, so I certainly know Dan Plews is in that camp.
Yeah, he's said a few times he doesn't not believe in electrolytes, but he kind of doesn't see the point of them during the
Absolutely. That's the only thing we actually disagree with. We had a chat in the beginning, a stern chat, like I'm obviously involved with pH and I will truly believe that I've helped quite a lot of people, and I totally see where the science is coming from. And precision, that's exactly how they feel as well. They know this, so they don't shove it down everyone's throat. And that's really important to know. But back to about 5 minutes ago, the outliers and the people that are having problems and then don't have problems by taking some extra. So there's both sides to it, and I see both sides, and I totally hear it. So he's prominent, and he does take a little bit of electrolytes. He did Roth with you in 818, has a little bit in his bottles, but he doesn't believe that. Now, he could be an outlier, he could be really low, I don't know.
Can we just put context to that, mate? Is that so? What he's saying is that if you're eating balanced enough diet, you know, proper foods, your sodium content within your blood and within your body should be enough to get you through a race without having to supplement extra sodium in?
Yes and no. Yeah. So the way I understand it, Andy Blow probably explained it way more technically than I would, the owner. We have blood plasma. We're quite salty people, humans. So running, just sitting here now, you talking to me, we tightly regulate it, 135 to 145. So if we dip below and above, our body's amazing and regulating, obviously. So if you sweat and sweat and sweat, don't really drink at all, you obviously will get thirsty and thirsty and thirstier. So your blood, in essence, will get the blood plasma, the salt content will just go up and up and up because you're removing fluid. So you'll appear like super salty, and that's absolutely right. So the opposite end, if you drink loads of water over the point of this thirst, gastric emptying kind of volume that your body can tolerate, and everyone's different, you'll just dilute that blood sodium. So your blood plasma then just dilutes more and more. And that's very medical. So all the sports scientists actually agree on that. If you overdrink water, hypernatremia, which is a form of low blood sodium, and then can lead to brain swelling and death. That is like a serious problem. Now, ultra runners are getting hospitalized every now and then by overdrink, basically just low blood sodium. We'll touch a bit on that. So back to that sort of coarse diet. So we call it like physiological state that you will be in right now to where you are last week. Might be slightly different fitness, slightly different diet. And your body will be in a slightly different state. But we have stores, like you store potassium, magnesium, calcium, all those trace elements intracellularly. And then you've got your extracellular fluid, which is just like, let's call it your bloodstream, your blood plasma. And that's where we have our nice salty blood. And that's regulated. Our kidneys then have to regulate. So if you have a super high salty drink and keep drinking, thinking more is better, I spend a bit of time telling people to obviously reduce the amount of electrolyte drink, because more is not better. It's a bit like gels. We'll touch on the fueling because some people think more is better. So then your body's going, okay, cool, thanks, you give me all this sort of extra sodium, I don't really want it, I don't need it, because people also ask, is this unhealthy, is it bad? So the kidneys will then process that. And of course, that's what got pumped into us years ago. I think it was the 80s, that salt basically just got a really bad PR. It's sodium chloride. It's table salt. If you think of that cheap table salt that's processed, that's kind of the bad stuff. And then the processed food. Now, that's the general population. I feel that we don't see, when I sweat test, we're seeing the fit people that are fairly active, at least not just once a week, twice a week walking. I'm talking about train most days. They aren't obese. They probably have fairly balanced diets. Again, assumption. So you would assume there's some salt in their diet. But if they have a high salt diet before a test, the body would regulate that sodium in their bloodstream. That's the point of that. So it's small effect. There's a small effect of having higher sodium in your diet to the outcome of the sweat test. However, your fluid loss in a short rate of time, whether it's a half an hour, an hour, is very individual. So that could be classic example in Dubai, you guys doing track sessions, I always see your photos sweating. They'll sweat over 2 liters now, some of the guys, the females slightly less. Now, that is a high loss of fluid. Your body will get thirsty, really dry throat, mouth, and it'll obviously force you to drink. We're amazing at cooling ourselves down. We'll be fine. Problem is, you get back in that evening, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, whatever it is, and you want to have a meal. You're then shoving loads of fluids in. And this becomes a problem. You're either up all night peeing, especially some of the older athletes I have in their 60s, I coach, which we don't want because that disrupts sleep and the recovery. And then you're also eating quite late as well. So, but you have to train in the cool times. You do it early in the morning, probably where you guys are, but then sometimes there's double days being triathletes. So you've got to just really pay attention to, you step back and look at your net losses. I think it's the best take home for people, just to kind of go, right, okay, how do I improve my general hydration? Is like, well, am I sweating a lot in terms of, am I doing indoor work? Am I doing work in Dubai from like literally May onwards? You guys are like insane. I don't know how you train now. And then it's probably why you did so well in Roth, because it's like altitude training. And then you also then look at, well, is it just an easy run? Fine, your body can just sweat, recover, and drink a little bit from that, and replace quite easily from the food. You get a bit of sodium in water. So yeah, it's a case of these guys believe that we can go really far on what we've got. What's actually really happening is what we see. Certainly why Precision are 12 years in and doing a booming, they're in the Tour de France now as we speak, with Team Lotto. So that's a first step showing that, you know, there is an individualization. They have been helping tour riders for a few years off the books, because they have product sponsorship. But yeah, it just comes down to be very individual, but it's quite easy to just get a test done. I know they do one. There's a guy in Dubai that does it, and it's just one off, and you can just check your sweat sodium composition. Doesn't mean that you sweat a lot of fluid, that you can just use a scale for and do it in different environments.
Yeah. And if you were looking at that more anecdotally, mate,
yeah.
For example, on the weekend was the first ride I've done in a couple of weeks, and it was scorching. Like, wasn't that sunny, but it was really high humidity. I think I looked at the temperature gauge when it was about 7 a.m. and I think it was about 38 degrees, and we had about an hour and a bit left of the ride. So it got up to above probably 40s when we were riding, and the sweat's going in my eyes and it's stinging my eyes. And I thought, wow, I must be getting a lot of salt out for it to be stinging my eyes like this. So obviously I always do take a lot of electrolytes anyway, because through anecdotal evidence, believe that I have a high sodium loss. But if we're looking on anecdotal level, would that be a way of also saying, okay, you've got quite high sodium in your sweat? And can it change? Because I sometimes don't get that. I sweat in my eyes and I don't feel it, but sometimes I do. So I'm like, I know we say that it doesn't change, but can it change a little bit? And what are the signs you're looking for to show that someone is quite a high sodium loss sweater or isn't?
Great. Yeah, great point. So quick fire answer there. If you went on their website, you'd get the same answers, like, how do I sort of self-test? We see white marks quite prominent on your kit and your helmet straps if you're riding. Mm. In your case, then the runners will see it. Now, we all will be a little bit saltier the longer we stay out. So I'll touch on that in a second, my view on that, what was happening to you. But yeah, salty, you kind of know if you sweat a lot. That's, you just know if you're a sweater. But people come to see me, they're like, oh, I sweat tons. Or some of the small females like I never really sweat. You just know. Okay, so that and bigger guys, 85, 90 kilos, will just naturally sweat more. It doesn't mean they're salty, though. Marks on your kit. And just another one is where people don't, they go, oh, big light bulb moment. They feel rubbish in the afternoon. They go, they'll do a classic hour and a half spin class, or they'll do what you did on the weekend. And then in the afternoon, they just sort of drop off a cliff. Now, okay, if they didn't have a proper feed afterwards, or they missed lunch, or they went straight to a social thing, of course, that's probably fuel. But I know I fall into this trap where it feels like your sugar levels are dropping. So you reach for carbs or stimulants, coffee or obviously carbohydrates, late in the afternoon, or you just want to sleep, or you're also quite foggy, that brain fog. And I've had a lot of people come back to me and go, gosh, I feel so much better the whole way through the day. And especially females, which opens up another conversation, sort of around that menopausal age, where they lose quite a lot of fluid at night, I'm finding just through talking to people, through sweats and also just breathing and temperature in the house. You want to just balance out through the day better. And if you're having these drop-offs in the afternoon and these sort of cravings, it's probably due to hydration. So you can do some self-checks. Again, this information is quite available because their site's brilliant. It's the check-in in the morning. Fogginess, dryness in the mouth, fairly obvious. Easier for men to check their pee. First thing, females, just have a look at that. You don't want it. It'll never probably be clear in the morning, but pale yellow. If it's super dark, these are all kind of well-known facts. If it's super dark, there's a chance, you know, you've gone through the night, you probably are a bit dehydrated. And then kind of your state of mind in the morning, because we had reached for a caffeine hit or a coffee, which we all love, but actually it could just be rather start your day just before you have that, get into a habit. It takes you about, unfortunately, 90 days to create that new habit, 9 days to lose it, is just have at least 500 mils. I use it as a pint as an example of, if it's been a sweaty night, I'd probably have some background electrolytes. Now, that's a weak solution. You could argue, well, I'll just have water. That's fine. Let's not get into the finer details of exactly what. Get the fluid in before you then obviously hit straight into caffeine. So salty marks. And then what you did probably on that ride, how long was it? Sorry.
About 2.5 hours in the end.
Okay. So, yeah. So obviously a moderate duration for you, not enough to get, in our terms, dehydrated, as in, like, you know, you will always finish lower. Let's just take home one thing today. If you do remember one thing, guys, it's, you never want to replace like for like in electrolytes and like for like in fluid loss. So you must remember this for a race. That's not what we're trying to do. So you want to finish an event in a dehydrated state, because you will finish lighter. It's just the natural way of our body. So on a training ride, you will be on the back foot. However, you probably lost quite a lot of fluid in a short space of time, depending on how hard you were going in that group. And the only thing I can think of is that you taste it. Sometimes you taste saltier, sometimes not. It's the concentration of what's going on in the blood plasma right then. Maybe it's a bit of sun cream. We don't know. But it's, if you have lost a lot of fluid in a short space of time, it'll appear saltier. So no, it won't change. The composition is still what it was. Let's call it 900 milligrams a liter that you lose. Over the period of your life, the concentration, the sweat composition, they have seen, they've retested loads of people over and over. It changes a few milligrams, but we don't have to retest later in life, because on the grand scheme of things of hydration, it's a drop in the sort of the swimming pool in terms of salt, because our body will always auto-regulate. So we don't have to redo it. So that's the joy of it. It's pretty much genetically set with you. So if you're a low sodium sweater in your composition, it's, chances are you're going to be like that for the rest of your life. So not knowing your numbers, you might just appear, bear in mind, you had just come back. Roth was a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I'd just come back in that week from
so that's actually quite pertinent, because I just thought of that. Yeah. You just come back. You had been out of Dubai heat. your body will, and you asked a question, which was really quite important, does it change? Your body will always regulate to the climate. Of course, we're amazing. Everyone knows you go to, like, if I go to Asia for the first, you know, first few days is horrendous. And if I come over similar to you guys, just be like in a world of, you know, sweat rate goes through the roof, blood plasma drops, heart rates, everything's up, RPE, but then you regulate. And you would have come to Europe cooler, no humidity. Roth was like, I don't know, 26, 29. It might've been a bit hot on the run. I wasn't obviously there, but I was helping someone from Saudi Arabia with their nutrition. And I was looking at the temperatures at different parts of the day for her. And so you've now come back and straight into 40 plus with high humidity, your body would have freaked out and gone, I'm not ready for it, but it remembers like that. And I think that's probably, I'm just off the cuff, don't know any of the details, what you were sort of had for breakfast, how, what state you went into it. The other thing I will say is people are starting their day, especially in your climate, and they're not paying attention to any sort of preloading. So we might think about getting some fuel in, some carbs. Now, carb can be anything that you want. It might be protein. I'm quite protein dominant and always push that first. And then, but they're not having like a sodium drink potentially to help them and get through what is going to be a heavy loss in a short period of time. Mm. It's not that we have to have electrolytes because we live in, you know, your body will adapt. But what I'm finding is helping, and of course, Precision created this, is having a high strength electrolyte drink with a small amount of volume of water, 500 mils, to preload, increase the blood plasma. So when you start, you're not starting with a low blood sodium, guys. So if you drink a shitload of water and then dilute your blood sodium and then go and sweat more, guys are actually cramping from actually losing the fluid, but having had a whole lot of water before the start of the event. Mm. And they can't get their head around. I test it and they come out with like 500 milligrams of sodium, which is super low. They don't necessarily need a lot of sodium in the event. I give them a little bit of a guidance. Sometimes there's enough in an energy drink, but they're arriving, I suspect, in an overhydrated state. And that's one of the medical things that we're finding, which I said at the start of this 40 minutes ago, this conversation, is I'm seeing the ultra runners do this a lot. And it's a huge, huge issue. The race organizers obviously aware of it as well. But sodium salt pills are sort of only mandatory in like marathon to Saab, I think. And some of the, I'm not an ultra expert. I know they will advocate in some of their race packs as your kit. But I help a lot of MDS guys and obviously it's mandatory. But then there's salt and there's salt. So there's pills can range from 80 milligrams of salt sticks to like pH to a 250 pill. So then you're like, okay, well, I took a pill. Okay, well, here's another take home, guys. With hydration, concentration is everything. So back to the boxes. If I put a hydration tab in there, they've got these big 2 liter bottles on the side of the ring. That hydration 2 liter bottle, one effervescent, is like completely different drink to a 500 ml bottle, which is meant to design to be dissolved in with the same tablet.
Yeah.
And you're like, of course it is, because it's all to do with osmolality. So the body loves a certain amount of sodium. And that's why you go on a saline drip. If you've ever been on one after an Ironman, I've been on two. It's amazing. You collapse when you walk in. I remember walking to Ironman Australia and completely, they didn't believe me. And I finally went through the final checks and they put me on, I was shaking, put me on the table, the bed collapsed. And I was like, wow, I still managed to crack out a joke. Bear in mind, I'm like 70 kilos dehydrated. It's like, geez, I broke the bed. I must be heavy. And the poor nurses didn't know what to do themselves. The whole thing collapsed. I was like, I don't really care. I can't feel anything. And then, you know, half an hour later, I feel great. But they didn't want to put me on a drip for the love of money for the first hour because they put you in this, I don't know, holding effarage or whatever they call it in the beginning, triage. And then, anyway, but bottom line is you feel amazing. What is that? It's a bit of sugar and salt, eh? Good old rehydrate. But intravenously, it comes up slowly. Hydration takes a while to bring in. We've all bonked sugar. Losses, fueling, you can come back with a Coke or a quick gel quite quickly. So starts to get us thinking about, there's drinking and then there's fuel and then there's sodium as a bit of a question mark around it. Like, should we add a bit? And those three levers, which again, Precision have coined quite nicely, is a really nice article on their website. If you want to read it, three levers of hydration, it brings in those three areas. And I think that's one of the things that people need to start paying more attention to, not just over drinking, not just doing it for race day. Think about their net losses in training, especially where you live in your climate. starting your day how you mean to go on, a bit like protein. If you don't get your 30 to 40 grams in the morning, you're on the back foot all through the day. Energy levels, poor food choices, and metabolic, like, you know, health that's not sustainable for endurance. So,
yeah,
at least all the top dogs talk about protein on that level. So that's quite nice to hear the professors. So we could touch on your Roth, what you put in your bottles, because I think listeners will be able to resonate with that because they know you as well, some of them. And then maybe just give some of the differences, what people are doing in their bottles, because I think that was one of your topics.
Yeah, and I think just to go back to your last point, the three levers, as PF have coined it, but it really has to be seen that way. And I've seen it in examples with clients, is like, you tell them, okay, you need to take an electrolyte, and they're like, cool, yep, I'll do that. And then you know, they take a tablet in the morning mixed in 1.5 liters, and then they drink that and they think their hydration needs are sorted for the rest of the day. And it's like, well, okay, you did really well at the beginning. You drank 1.5 liters, let's say in 2 hours with 1,000 milligrams of sodium.
Yeah.
Great. But, you know, that doesn't help you the next day, and it doesn't help you the day after that. And it might not even help you in that morning's afternoon. It's a constant process of figuring out how much have you sweated? How much of a sweater are you in terms of sodium concentration, and being on top of it the whole time? Because it is something to do with sweat, which we're losing water nonstop, and especially here in Dubai, it's something you have to be thinking about nonstop. It's so different to like going and getting your bike serviced and your bike's now fine for a month.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And I think that's one of the barriers that we find with the sodium, the sweat talk and things like that, is people get really into it, but then it can easily be forgotten, especially when you're changing climates. Is you may have forgotten, like here in Dubai, but now we probably are having to replace about 4 to 5 liters of fluid loss by the end of a day when we're even just running an hour in the morning, let alone doing the two-a-days, like you said. Yeah. And the minute you step off your A game on it, it will be having an effect on you.
Yeah.
And I think the way I look at sodium and the way you've explained it there is really good, is when, like you say, you can be really hydrated, but unless you've got the same balance of the sodium in your fluid intake, it won't make you optimal. So whenever we're thinking of replacing fluid, like you say, the three levers, we're either thinking of it being on a sodium level, on a just a pure fluid level, or on a carbohydrate level as well. And I always think that when you get to that point, people are like, that sounds too complicated, I'm out. Do you know what I mean? Okay. It's because like you say, if you're eating a really salty meal, then drinking, you know, 800 mils of fluid around it is probably going to be enough. You're going to have your sodium concentration up because you're having salt within the meal. So then people are like, oh no, it's good, I've had a good meal, and I drank my electrolytes with my fluid. And you're like, oh, what was the meal? And they're like, you know, whatever, could be a bolognese, which, you know, some people put quite a lot of salt on. You're like, oh, you maybe didn't need to take the electrolyte. And it's like, well, I thought I had to take electrolytes. And it's like, but we've always got to be thinking, where are we within the sodium concentration level or in the fueling level? And it's not an easy game. You know, you get like guys like you and PF do really well of creating a lot of tools around how to figure it out. But it's such an ongoing game. If you had a client, or you were talking to a client, and they were asking you around how to make it a bit more simplified, where would you begin with simplifying things a bit more?
You're spot on. I mean, that's the real world we're living in. And we've got to make it accessible to, it's a really good question that you've asked there, to the everyday person. So let's...
Would it be as simple as saying, take, like, for example, in Dubai, right, it's hot. So I'm going to guess that if you're exercising, you need a hydration tab in your bottles. Was that too simple?
No, that's literally where I was going to start. I was going to break it down. I'll just get them to do, they don't even need to spend any money. In a perfect world, if you've got a scale, which brings other issues, but if you do one thing, do a bike and a run, or if you're just a runner, just do a runner. Work out at least just one or two data points. Go for 45 minutes up to an hour and a half of a session, find out your sweat rate. Because in that climb, it's actually not like the UK, 1 minute's 18 degrees, 1 minute's 26. It's just all in right now. You'll be surprised. You probably lose 1.5 liters an hour. Let's just use that for an example, which is fairly moderate moving into the high category. Do that. Find out your context, because that'll answer some of the questions of kind of like sessions. Okay. Start your day. I would start every day with, it doesn't matter what the brand is, a weak electrolyte tablet in 500 mils of water. Start your day, regardless of exercise. Okay. And then don't get too bogged down with, am I fueling? Am I using the right thing? Am I meant to be using gels, et cetera, et cetera? If you just work on 60 grams per hour, which is equivalent of 2 gels, if you had to use gels, but it could be 2 bananas, about 30 grams. So I'm not pushing energy products. I'm actually sort of more on the real food. Try work that on that basis per hour of exercise when you're going for longer than sort of 2 hours. Don't do it for an hour run, of course, so you don't need fuel. Unless it's high intensity, you would probably think about having some fuel. So yes, it's as simple as have an electrolyte drink in the morning, because your sweat losses through the day is far more than you can just, you can't just drink loads of water, because what will happen, and here's a question to your listeners, is do you feel like you're getting almost what's coined as Professor Tim Noakes wrote a book on it called Waterlogged. It's, do you feel just basically quite water, like waterlogged, water retention, quite sloshy, especially when you run? That's telling us your gastric emptying is not keeping up with your fluid intake. Now it comes back to this over drinking. Your body will not want to take on more water. It just says stop. It's horrible. Like it'll quite easily have something that's closer to your blood, your thickness of your blood. So your osmolality of your blood. So a hypertonic drink, which is a electrolyte drink, not necessarily an energy drink, because energy drink's more like 6% solution, or a Coca-Cola. Everyone knows what a Coke and a Gatorade taste like. That's moving up like 6, 8, 10% carbohydrate solution. It has to be broken down in the gut and then distributed. Whereas we're talking about a weak solution, thinner than your blood in terms of viscosity. It'll be drawn into your bloodstream like a sponge really quickly. Why we say that is it makes complete sense, because your body just wants to stay in this happy place, homeostasis, all day long. And if you arrive in a better place, you're going to get through the day. It could be just working actively, or just walking to the car and back in your climate is harsh. And then you start thinking, that's your day to day. Then you start thinking, okay, I'm at the track in a fight. Boom. It's an hour session. I'm probably going to lose a ton. I know I'll have a bottle on the side. In there, I'll just go middle of the road, not as weak as you would have in the morning, but on average, we lose about 1,000 milligrams a liter of sweat. Male or female, I would have that strength in your bottle, regardless of the intensity of the session, because what we don't want to do, the sodium helps us retain the fluid. So that's all we want to do. We don't want to be just over drinking fluid and then diluting, but then also we don't want to be doing overdoing the salt. So the next question people might ask, can I overdo the hydration salts? Because you get that all the time. And I was worried about that initially. Obviously, it's back to that, no, your body's amazing at saying no, because it doesn't want this salty drink after a certain point. And also our body auto-regulates all the time. So it'll just pee it out. And of course, if you do that long-term, that doesn't make common sense. You don't want to be doing that. So you guys have no problem in your climate, a bit different in the UK, to go standard middle of the road, electrolytes in your bottle every session, because your fluid loss, whether it's an easy run or bike, this is separate to having fuel. You might not even have any fuel. You could do 2-3 hours without fuel. That's a separate chat on low carb. But wake up in the morning, set yourself up, find out your sweat rate, just to go again, all free stuff, don't need to do it. And then you go, right, I'm a heavy sweat, I'm losing 2.5 liters an hour on a run. Okay, next question, Andy, do I drink 2.5 liters? Well, good luck to try to drink that. It's quite hard. The last bit of advice I'd go, well, in training, try just aim for 50%. So if you're losing a liter an hour, if you can drink 500, great. Your body will sip through the rest of the day. You'll be fine. And same with electrolytes. If you do get tested and you're losing 1,000 milligrams a liter, if you're getting 50% of that, you're doing really well. Now, there's some of the energy drinks, certainly the one you used in Roth, has that strength of electrolytes in, because it's the most commonly averaged loss is around 950 a thousand. So there's a reason why they put that strength in their product. Which none of the other energy drinks, they sort of all put a token, like Morton put about 200 milligrams in. They don't feel we need sodium. Again, superior product, maltodextrin carb, nothing wrong with it. But as I learned from testing some other people using that product in the pro world, that it's not enough sodium for them. And that it takes supplement on top and they feel much better back end of a marathon. So
cool. Okay. So I like that. Start with actually your specific loss in mind, and then that's the baseline. And then you can start to adjust things from there. We actually recommend trying to rehydrate, so post-session, with 1.5 times what you've lost in it.
Oh, do you? Yeah, just because of the sheer amount of volume that you lost. And then, now, if they are willing to get it, if they want to buy one product that anyone would buy, the strength-wise, and I'm sure a lot of people in Dubai is the 1500 strength, to have that post-session, which I know you will advocate, because you just know quite a lot about that through your own stuff there.
Cupboards are full of that. Cupboards are full of it, because you can always break it in half if you want less.
Yeah.
You know, you can always break it in half if you want less. Oh.
If it's too salty, that's the idea. I mean, you just work out what, but if you just have one thing at 500 mils, you're just replacing and you'll feel so much better the next day. You said something really pertinent there in 5 minutes ago about, well, you're not just hydrating for now. You've got to think about tomorrow. And when you start, you can only control what you did yesterday, what you're doing today, and you know what you're going to do tomorrow, pretty much. That's kind of your 3-day thing. So if you look at your hydration a bit like that, okay, I stuffed up yesterday. I was out for 5 hours with Tom. I was only going for 2. So I didn't have enough refills. Okay, cool. Don't panic. You'll just feel rubbish for a while. Bring that back up. Have an easier day today where you don't have a lot of sweat loss. Maybe do some strength training. Tomorrow, you just need to be on top of your fueling and drinking from the morning, not 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Look at your day better. Don't look at your sherbet. I've been out for 5 hours with the gang. You it starts in the morning. Mm. It actually starts the night before. I'm incorrect there. If you know you're on for a big day, I'll leave it on this. Mm. That's why they say preload for a race the night before. Where you live, it's your Thursday night for your Friday morning ride, your weekend. On the Thursday night, I would be on, and you know, I know you'll do this yourself, I'd be on a 1500 strength to bring it up your hydration status, your blood plasma the night before. Yep. It'll store some and that'll start you on Friday morning in a better place.
Yeah, agreed. Good. Glad to know what I'm doing is correct.
Yeah. And just a note on product, because I hate pushing product personally as a coach. The only thing they're doing really well is making 3 strengths, guys. So small, medium, large t-shirt size. Off the shelf, your ones that you can get everywhere, your High Five, your SIS, probably in Dubai and other brands.
Yeah.
They are generally around the 500 milligram strength per liter. So 250 in a 500. That's just 2 weak. Yeah, that's all I wanted. It's just so weak. And yes, you could go, oh, it's cheap, I'll put 3 in. No, you're trebling up all the horrible sweeteners, and it's not the right way to mix electrolytes.
It's one of the reasons why we found the company and why we were drawn to it, or I was drawn to it, and love having, you know, any of you guys on the show, is because you guys understand it from an athlete perspective as well. Like, if you're using this, I mean, mainly you hear the chemists sell it, and it's, they're like 190 up to about 250 milligrams per serving, and when people don't realize is how many tablets are in a serving, so they're actually getting weaker than what they thought, and then you're spending a fortune on the amount you have to buy for it. So I remember when Precision came out with the 1500, and it was like, absolutely, we need those, they're so good for us here.
And another thing with the cheaper ones, just a little finer detail I've noticed, they're all sodium chloride, which is table salt, which you have to have more of to get the actual sodium of anyway. So it's exactly what you said. You're actually having to like take 10 of these things, and then you're like, am I just taking a whole lot of table salt? And that's cheap electrolytes, where pH is like a sodium citrate, which is a bit more alkaline. But you're absolutely right. It's, you know, that's fine for a background. If someone's just doing a little bit of exercise with you, they don't really want to go down too full on, because you've obviously got your elite, you've got your proper athletes, big time, and then you've got your just everyday, and then the middle of the road. Mm. If they just want to have, you know, the everyday people just having a week, whatever you get at a chemist and stuff, at least you're doing something about your balance, and you'll probably feel better straight away. But definitely, if you ask 9,900 nutritionists, 99 of them will probably say the same: have, you know, cook with some pink salt or Himalayan salt or rock salt in your food. Again, that's relative to kind of, again, moderation, but we could go down that rabbit hole quite easily if we wanted to. So that's kind of the rule I stick to. And people get back to me and go, oh, they just feel so much better at night. Their sleep's affected. And I get a lot of crampers, of course, but that's another huge topic as well. So we're just touching on sort of some really easy wins. And you can see how that carries over, Tom, for the people listening, like to their sort of maybe their ultras or their race, because they're like, ah, okay, I'm probably not paying attention to my day today. And then when I start on the races on the Saturday, I'm like, Thursday, I'm on it with the water and maybe a bit of electrolytes, but they're drinking A, too much water, or B, just weak electrolytes. Body's not going to do much with that. So just pay attention to that. And then there's the fueling. So we've spent quite a lot of time just on day-to-day hydration, mainly because I think of your environment.
Yeah.
So it's, I think,
well,
it's,
we can
really
go on to fueling now. With, you mentioned about what I did for Roth, and I'm happy to share it because I think you're with your mind and you've come across a lot of different case studies. You can pick a few things from it that you think maybe could have done different, or what, you know, good learnings for people using it as well. But if we do start there, I think one thing that I'm happy I did do is the days prior, I am drinking a fair amount of fluid. No, I was probably on about 2.5 to 3 liters in the day, and using a electrolyte tablet in the morning and in the evening as well, because obviously knowing the importance of it. So we begin there is the pre-days. I am definitely pre-loading with electrolyte, which I think for a lot of people could benefit from that.
100%. You don't have to overdo the water. You just have to, the research says like a day or two before is fine. It's ample and you can go. That's why they've created this sort of super strong one, so you don't have to do loads of days of it. But because it was quite warm and you're mincing around, do the odd ride and stuff, but you're not heavily training in the taper, you still lose some fluids. So you were just keeping your stores topped, your food would have been balanced, and you would have just arrived in a nice optimal. Certainly the morning of, you wouldn't have been peeing clear pee all the time, I would hope, because of your knowledge. And also you just wouldn't have been overdoing the fluids. And that's,
yeah. Yeah. In the morning, then I'm because I don't want to be, you know, swimming, needing a pee, or on the bike, needing to stop to pee. That meant in the morning, I limit myself to 500 mils. And I have, again, I make that into a solution of 30 grams carb, 500 milligrams of sodium, but only in 500 mils. So I know I drink that 500 mils and I know that I'm ready to go without being over ready. So not needing to pee while I start the race.
I think that's something you've devised. Clearly you've, you get good outcomes. You would have known if you're not feeling great and you would have adjusted that. I would probably, exactly that, 500 mils is a great start in the morning. So your morning routines, porridge and your coffee and stuff or whatever. I'd have the 500, so that's a volume of fluid is quite important, with a super strong 1500. And then there's quite a few hours before the start. Now people nervously drink then, what I've found. Yeah. And they're probably sipping on one or two things, plain water or energy drink. Energy drink obviously just keeps spiking you, and then you get the sort of insulin response and you drop off. You could argue that that's fine because you're obviously going to utilize that, and you just have to stay on top of it. What I generally advocate, and do myself as well, is I just drink on the middle strength 1000 milligram, through the transition, whenever I want to take a sip of fluid, it's just hydration. So it's zero calories. It's not affecting the bloodstream, the sort of spikes, whether you want caffeine before, that's choice. 15, 30 minutes before, that's a separate thing. That's generally in a gel format or a pill. So your fueling's done 2.5-3 hours before, you then dropping off that, and then you could top up the stores. That's just a glycogen sort of roller coaster, same with caffeine. But And Abby on your podcast ages ago explained the caffeine role really nicely. I remember that one. That was great. And that's all available on their website, kind of the drip feed of caffeine. But which again, we didn't know like properly 10 years ago, like what, like do you just take coffee or abstain and all this sort of stuff? That's quite interesting. But yeah, you just want to look at it in the context. So you don't want to be peeing all the time. I think having a pee at the start of the swim is okay.
Yeah.
In your wetsuit, it's not a wetsuit swim. Yeah, difficult. Just wetsuit. You just sort of, I remember in Kona in October, I was standing next to a guy, literally, obviously no wetsuits. And I was standing with a buddy and I was like, look at this guy. He was like South American, just peed all over my foot. And I was like, dude, like wait till you get into the ocean. At least you're like all over my foot on the carpet. Didn't even notice. Like, but then on the bike, I think, just to make that point, I've always, Mike, this is my coach brain kicking. You said like, oh, I didn't really want to pee on the bike, but actually you at least want to pee once. I think, I mean, I did twice in Hawaii and I was like, right, I'm nailing this. This is great. Whether it was too much, I mean, who knows? And I can't tell you the color of it, but you could ask the guy behind me, but you do want to kind of, this is the Ironman, of course, 9 hours, 10 hours of exercise. Did you pee at all?
No, it's the first time in an Ironman race I've never peed on the bike, which I was happy about because I can do it, but it's not. I don't want to slow down and stop and have to go.
That's a hassle.
So that's why I really limited myself to that 500 mils in the morning to just try and prevent that.
Well, you clearly felt all right. And if you didn't feel you experienced enough, you'd done quite a few at that pointy end, you would have just rebalanced on the fly. Now, unfortunately, beginners and intermediate people, they freak out and they overdrink or they stop for more energy drink. And that becomes a problem because, of course, it comes up, it rears its head 3 hours later when their gastric emptying hasn't quite matched the volume you pump again. So
yeah. I think the other point to mention here, we're talking about racing, not training.
Yeah.
So different things. And you already said this, is like we should finish a race empty. Like they say you can go down to about 10% of, you can be 10% dehydrated, that kind of area, right? That's where we should be finishing in a race. But in training, we're actually thinking because of the next session coming up. And as you said, one of the most consistent things you hear from coaches is consistency. We're trying to finish the session and be ready for the next. Whereas you're trying to finish a race and find the beer tent.
Spot on. Yeah. It's like caffeine. You don't want to be taking an espresso shot at like 38 Ks into marathon. Like that's just clutching for straws. Exactly that. Yeah. They say this 2 to 6% is acceptable of dehydration. And then, you know, you hear the really experienced guys go, well, we've never tested people that have finished like, you know, Kipchoge and those guys, they're finishing way like 10% body, like exactly where you said their body weight. And because you're burning through glycogen stores, muscle, you can't actually measure it. But yeah, don't get bogged down. The acceptable range is like, you know, 3-4%. That's like, you can push it to 10 because you won't ever know. But because unless you're really like in a lab environment or something or weighing everything. But you're right. You want to empty the tank. In terms of, you do not want to try and finish, you know, be obsessed with drinking loads. Same with fuel. Less is actually better. And Plus is quite an advocate of this. He shares what he has. He has like 50 grams an hour on the marathon, or on the bike, sorry. And the marathon, he has like one gel, maybe two. And he's doing 250. But bear in mind, he's a super high fat oxidization, very good applied physiologist, scientist. And then, of course, has been a low carb athlete, I think, for
long time,
seven, 8 years now. So it's a different horses for courses for him, and not everyone needs to go down as extreme route. But I think the biggest thing is that if you train a bit lower in carbohydrates and then you have your range, which needs to be dialed in an event, you tend to operate really well because your metabolic flexibility is really good. So you can tap into your fat stores really well because you're quite used to training low. That's also can be dangerous. And then when you push 60, 70, 80, up to 90 grams an hour, which I think you were pushing maybe close to 90, we'll chat about that now, in Roth, is then your body can obviously tap into that exogenous ketones really well and use both. And that's ultimately what stops us running out of energy in a long race. It's not in a marathon, it's too short. So you said you used gel mixed in water, which is what a lot of the elites and pros do.
Yeah,
they measure right, 5 hour bike or whatever, 4 hours for some of them. They might make a 4.5 hour bottle and they'll squeeze X amount of gels in because it's literally, you can see the money on the packet. You just go right, 90 grams, diluted with a bit of water, so it's obviously palatable and slides down the bottle. That's what we call, you know, like a sort of a liquid liquid lunch. Of course, your carbs are all in one, and then you would have been aware of having some sort of hydration. So if we call hydration your sodium intake, it sounds like you just had a moderate amount taking in. I won't do the numbers chat, but what you said, it was, you were aware of it. You had some in your other bottle with energy drink, which is what most people will do. So your majority of your stuff came from liquid carbohydrates, which is what a lot of the fueling brands, SIS making this beta fuel, Morton making a strong drink, 320, is they relying on a highly densely concentrated carbohydrate drink. And then the idea is you drip feed that in. Really good way to do it is every 20 minutes is drip feed. The body loves it like that. And you should get through X amount of hours of exercise. And you certainly had a great performance. You can tell me how, if you felt a bit sloshy or not great in certain parts of the run in a second, but what we're finding that works for a really small amount of people, certainly it works well for some of the elites. They have a slightly different fat metabolism. Some of them are pushing like 100, 120 an hour. Leon Chevalier, the French guy for Precision, he's pushing high amounts. He's worked towards that. The science says, and there's a really good blog that was just put out, or science paper meta-analysis, that we can only ingest up to 90. And if you're taking 120, we're only going to take 75% of that, which is 90. So certainly beginners, I'm finding they are pushing the upper value too much and fine till the end of the bike. And then they can't generally consume anything. And then they have a terrible run event.
Yeah.
Fairly common. Not so much with marathon. It's too short. You can get away with murder in a half Ironman as well, 4, 5, 6 hours event. So separating your fuel, so your solids, would have been one way to do, and this is how I do it and advocate for most of my people, unless they've practiced it and they go, no, I'm actually going to do liquid carbs, my stomach's gold, and then they move on to gels on the run and they had the odd solid. So I've advocated people a bit more away from gels on the bike, solids or chews, which we call like sort of semi-solids, easy to palate, like you don't get that hungry, and then you just drink to the environment, the thirst, and that will be a hydration drink, not just fluid. Replace with water from aid stations, leave the energy drink away, and then you just have some salt pills to just make that osmolality of that drink suitable. That's either through testing, or if you're winging it, it's just, 1 to 2 salt pills from Precision per hour should keep you out of jail.
Yeah.
If you're someone that cramps a lot and has stomach nausea and upset, then you still need to start going another level down. So you see there's layers in this. So you fine tune this yourself and you seem to work fine. You've done the training in the heat, in the build up. You go, right, I'm cool with this strength of carbohydrate. Did you hit like 60 an hour on the bike? You were just under 5 hours. How much did you get?
Yeah, so I had 90. I was on for 90 grams an hour. So I put 3 90-gram gels into one bottle.
Yeah.
And then I had 3 other 30-gram gels on me to take. And then one of those being caffeine. And then I had 2 bottles made up with 30-gram of carb solution in there as well. And then also because when we're taking in a lot of fluid carbs or gels or food that doesn't require any kind of, or very easy to digest, I actually find I get quite hungry. So I also took with me in my front sort of bento box, I just chucked in a load of basically sweets, like hard cased sweets, and just ate one of those every 30 minutes just to have something to chew on and actually create saliva, which tells you that you're actually, okay, you are eating, you're not hungry. So my stomach never felt hungry. My stomach never felt anything, actually. It was great, great the whole day, but I used all 3. My also thinking there was, if I'm finding the gels aren't going down great, I'll just pick up more carb solution from the aid stations. If I'm finding that the bottle isn't tasting great, then I'll pick up more gels from the aid station. So as you say, metabolic flexibility is one thing, but I also believe that we should be in a position where we can also be flexible with how we want to fuel as well.
You're spot on. Yeah. First workout demands of the event. More or less, you know that ahead of time. Otherwise, you're going in blind.
Yeah.
Look at, okay, we all agree of a range. 60 to 90 is acceptable. You've pushed the upper limit, which is great. I will start people on the low and then maybe move to the middle and then see how they feel. And you're absolutely right. Then it's like the source of the carb. All agree that carb is probably the best source for, and then the longer the event, the slower like an ultra of 10, 12, 20 hours, you can go solids and obviously quite protein-based because you're moving so slow. So yeah, then that should be the final thing. And that is exactly that. It's like, okay, well, what do I have access to? What can I carry? What do I like? I hate gels. There's so many people that just can't handle it. They're either trying the too sugary, sort of high fivey, super sweet sugar, like basically honey and water, or nowadays it's all moving towards maltodextrin and a bit of fructose. And you clearly had enough tapping in. You were working within your parameters of pacing. And then your sweat rate matched, you know, the fluid intake that you were sipping on cups through the run. And, you know, you had a really good marathon. And by then the damage is done. You could probably get it by on like one gel an hour. But, you know, why make things as harder when you can make all we're trying to make do the whole, you know, with training, we're just trying to make the whole race a little bit easier metabolically. So like how much fuel you're burning through. And sometimes that makes us go faster, but generally we want to have a happy stomach first and not walk. You know, we could go into the different, we're going on quite a bit here, but we could go into like, why are we vomiting? Why do we feel nauseous? Why do we feel like stomach cramping? There's a few little quite easy wins there, but maybe there's a part two to this because
I mean, there's a good question around that, which is so for me, a bit boring for people, everything worked out fine, had a good performance. Let's say we get through halfway on the bike and we're not finding maybe, you know, stomach isn't feeling great. So for example, let's say I'm talking to you as an athlete, like I got halfway through the bike, my stomach didn't feel great. I felt like I couldn't drink enough water, but I knew if I drank too much water, my stomach would start sloshing. What signs am I giving you there? And what would be your advice to someone who has found themselves in that situation during an Ironman or is going into an Ironman and worried about that situation?
Yeah, they're probably, that happens. That's the most common thing, Tom. So great question. It's, I think different scenarios, but they're probably relying on a lot of the energy drink, first of all, to do both jobs, fueling and hydrating, which is exactly what it's sort of doing. They've got halfway through, 3 hours in, and they're sloshy. So they've been drinking to match their energy demands, call it 90 grams an hour. But the fluid amount that's going with that is too high for various reasons. Their sweat rate, it might be a cooler race. It might just be too sickly sweet and so on. So the obvious thing is to back off of the drinking because you've got to get some emptying going, gastric emptying through some sweat and hopefully you need a pee. If you are not taking any additional sodium, chances are if you're feeling a bit nauseous in that sense, back off from the sugars, plain water and some salt generally can help settle the tummy. You have to slow down. That naturally will because you just don't feel great. Mm. You're still moving on a bike, which is great. So you might lose a couple of minutes or something. So ideally try have some sodium there. So I would always advocate carrying some backup in your pockets, whether you use it or not. It's up to you if you don't know anything about it. If you start back up on the energy drink and it's happening again, flexible plan B, move towards grabbing some solids, go onto plain water, stop taking the energy drink from the aid stations. You obviously will have to stop at the aid station. There's often bananas, at least that's real food, bars, etc. I would go onto some solids and don't overthink it. Just listen to your body. Back off on the fluids. You're probably overdoing the drinking. If you eject, the body is generally happens in hot races. So you're feeling nauseous. It starts in coming on and then you hear a classic is I got to 120 Ks and I couldn't take anything in and I was vomiting. Generally, we say to change that fueling strategy, first of all, in the real time, but your next race is get off that energy drink because it's obviously too much sugar in going in, even though you trained with it in practice, in training at home. You're getting the osmolality in the stomach just wrong. So you're either not taking enough, obviously, fluid in full stop, so just plain fluid, little or no sodium, or it's a massively hot race. So what happens to the blood goes to the surface, prioritizes going to the surface of the skin. Surface of the body, the skin. So it's cooling you down. It's going away from your stomach. So it can't do both jobs. It'll always prioritize that to fueling. So if you keep shoving in that stuff, whatever it is, product, anything, it'll eject. And often, unfortunately, comes out on the run because you then are jostling up and down, slosh, slosh. So gastric emptying. By drinking less fluid with a bit of sodium, you then regulate how much your body will retain some of that fluid. That's all we're trying to do. We will dehydrate. We will lose fluid. We can't replace a liter or like a liter or a liter and a half. 50 to 75% is a great place to start. Again, you need to trial that. No one can tell you exactly how much to drink per hour, like milliliters, but we can give you a range. So if someone really can't drink 500, like they literally just can't, you know, if I can get them to do 300, that's great. Male or female, depending on their size, but then we need to pick that up to at least sort of maybe 50% of your losses in that environment. It's easy for you guys to practice environment because it's pretty much the same all the time at the moment. So
that's good.
Hopefully that answers.
Yeah, I think the key part to that is if you are getting stomach issues, stop trying what you are already doing.
Yeah.
Something has to change. Yeah. Stop just forcing gels down.
Yes.
And you probably are going to have to quieten down the ego. And even if you can just walk for 10 minutes and just let yourself settle and get some, like you say, gastric emptying, which just means that you're allowing the fuel and the fluid to pass through and start getting into the process of digesting, then you might actually be able to save, let's say, the back half of the marathon if it is during an Ironman. But if you just think, oh, stomach's bad, need to stop, go to the toilet, and then carry on fueling again with gels, then yeah, it's probably not going to change.
If you get that like stomach cramp, that we've all had something like that where it's actually, you know, there's nauseous, that's generally from like sugar and heat and just 8 hours of blah. That cramping in the stomach where you kind of, I'm not talking about like a muscle cramp in your legs. It's just the stomach again. You're on a dehydration plateau, and it's the osmolality has changed. So in your blood is so salty now and thick. So we need to get some. Obviously, you need to drink some more to try help change that. And that's generally you're obviously messed up your actual fluid intake, and that's going unprepared if you're a heavy sweater into an event. Unfortunately, it happens to a lot to beginners and people that maybe only done one or two races, and they figure, you know, they think they have to figure it out in the races, which is what we all did, I think, 10 plus years ago. So now you can actually go in with a massive strategy and a get out of jail kind of three scenarios, and then you're never going to get it right. But you sounds like, you know, obviously you've done a few before this and you got it really well dialed in Roth and you nipped in under the 9 hours, and that'll do to your conditioning going into it. And also I really truly believe training in your climate gave you a huge, huge advantage. There's a lot more coming out of that with research. So it's like training at altitude basically.
But it definitely takes practice and takes an acceptance to be able to change it on the fly as well. But more importantly is the practicing it in training, which I think people know, you know, nutrition being
a fourth
discipline.
That. Yeah.
Hopefully do a good enough message of sharing it. But it's been really good. I think another thing to just plug is the Precision Fueling Hydration website is a different level. If you are interested in this kind of talk, they have some incredible case studies on there. Which you can go and have a look at and maybe start experimenting with. And then also a load of great blogs on there all around all the topics that you've spoken about today, mate, as well. So, thank you for coming on and giving us a bit of real world experience, because I think a lot of times this stuff can be written from the textbooks and from the labs, which is, as you know, so well drilled out. And in the real world, different things happen. And hopefully we've covered enough of those topics today.
My pleasure, man. It's a huge topic, and that's why we've gone on so long. There's always different parts to it. And apologies, maybe people sitting on the turbo and doing a whole long podcast. We lost them 40 minutes ago. But I mean, hopefully you learned something. So
good. I mean, nice if people want to get in touch with you, how can they?
I'm on the Precision website, but I've got my own website, try-tanium.com.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
All through Dan Plouze's website, EndureIQ. But I'm one of the coaches in there. But most importantly, if they're in the UK, or I travel with testing as well. I was in Saudi Arabia early this year, but I know you guys got a test in Dubai anyway, so that's cool. At the bike shop somewhere there. And
Yeah, that's with Edge Cycling in Town Square, if you are here in Dubai with Omar. Yeah. Awesome, mate. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And yeah, guys, show notes is how you can get in touch with Andy. And like I say, head over to that website, precisionfuelandhydration.com, and you're going to find a load of resources if you want to know more. If you also want to know more and want to ask direct question, then you can email endurance@innerfight.com. Andy, we'll say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Cheers, man.